We've been discussing prayers of Prahlad Maharaj to Lord Nrsingadev. Comes in chapter 9 of the 7th canto. And what's happening in this section is it's going more deeply in a topic that's already been presented, actually several topics. Prahlad Maharaj has already touched on the non-difference of the Supreme Lord with everything and the difference, because he's the source, the difference of everything with the Supreme Lord. A profound and even puzzling teaching, simultaneous difference and non-difference of all things with Krishna. Then he went into a section where he was, as if the Lord was wanting him to take something material, he was asking him to not ask him to take something material. And giving lists of things that he doesn't want, and giving his reasons why he didn't want them. They're temporary, they're fallible. His father had everything, and in a flash it was taken from him. And so, what's the use? And from higher planets down to lower, all are... So, he's detached from all worldly things, and he sees the process of bhakti being the superior, in fact, the only meaningful process to take shelter of. So he's asking for the association of Narada or other similar Paramahamsa Vaishnavas. These are little summary points. Now he's going to go back to this Achintya Beda Beda Tattva teaching. We'll be discussing five verses. He lays the foundation in the first two, and then in the next three, he's giving a quick summary of creation, how it is that everything comes from the Supreme Lord. And the very prominent is the function of time. This element of time and timelessness and fear and fearlessness and these things that are puzzling, Prahlad has got it down. And he's presenting them as prayers, and they're for our edification, their teachings on transcendental reality. And all of these realities point to one thing, that's devotion to the personality of Godhead. So we'll see shortly how that works, how this puzzling, maybe even boring, for some people anyways, philosophy is boring. But it leads to, it's intended to bring one to the position of devotion. We'll try to make that evident. This teaching of Achintya Beda Beda Tattva is not exclusively Bhagavatam, it's Bhagavad Gita also. In these initial chapters of chapter 9 of Bhagavad Gita, well, from 4 to 10, we're just going to be discussing 2. But the commentators have called this Aishvarya Gyan. Aishvarya means opulence. So how the Supreme Lord is the source of everything and yet is different from everything. And that's one of his mystic opulences. There's cut in these verses. One of them is, everything that is created does not rest in me. That's in verse 5. Whoops, what happened? Back the whole thing. There we go. All beings are in me, and then everything that is created does not rest in me. That's a contradiction, right? It's like saying we're in the room, but we're not in the room, or something like that. It's mutually exclusive situations, and materially speaking, not possible. So he said, Krishna says, behold thy mystic opulence. Now, the paradox or seeming contradiction has a purpose. The non-difference aspect of all things, well, the difference of all things inspires reverence. We're not the Supreme, we're the tiny part of the Supreme, and it promotes or helps to awaken a mood of service. That's supposing you're a Mayavadi. There's no Mayavadis here, but supposing somebody was a Mayavadi. They have no mood of service. They don't have this distinction between the living entity and the Supreme. So that distinction helps awaken the mood of service. Now, our Acharya is described like this. The Abheda feature takes one beyond service into greater closeness of loving relation. Supposing, let's take a supposing. Supposing you go to school. Some people go to school. And sit in the class, person the first day of class, just signed up for the same class and you're in the same classroom. And day after day you sit by the same class and somebody, you know, drops their pen, so you pick up their pen and you hand them their pen. Oh, you dropped your pen. Oh, thank you. So you do some service. It's moving from neutrality to service. And this, then from service, you may get in some conversation, you go have lunch together, you develop a friendship. And there's more intimacy or closeness in the relationship than just some little service that you might do. And then it can continue and continue in some deepening of relationship. So our Acharyas describe that this Abheda feature is needed for that close loving relationship, and then the Abheda and Veda together foster or promote or facilitate is the foundation for intimacy of love. And so this difference, non-difference feature of the Supreme Lord, the Aishvarya Gyan, that he's, everything is within him and not within him, if one has faith, it can stimulate both reverence and devotion. Nice understanding. So here's just the first two of these 4 through 10 important verses in the Bhagavad Gita. Then we'll see how these messages, Bhagavad Gita, are expanded further in these verses of the Bhagavatam by Prahlad. Mayat tamidam sarvam jagat avyakta murti namat stani sarvabhutani na chaham teshu avastita. By me in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me. But I am not in them. And then this avyakta murti, what is that unmanifested form? I pervade this whole universe by my form which is invisible to materialize. This is Baladev's commentary. And simultaneously, all entities are within me, but I am not in them. Sounds like a word puzzle, right? What does that mean? He gives the example of sunshine. So sunshine is all pervasive, and things that are situated within the sunshine, it's like all entities are within me, but I am not in them. And a reference from Chaitanya Charitamrita explaining this. Therefore, material senses cannot appreciate Krishna's holy name, form, qualities, and pastimes when a conditioned soul, this is this avyaktamurti term, when a conditioned soul awakened, is awakened to Krishna consciousness and renders service by using his tongue to chant the Lord's holy name and taste the remnants of the Lord's food, the tongue is purified and gradually one comes to understand who Krishna really is. So this avyakta murti, how Krishna is present everywhere, invisible to material eyes, he can be perceived through the eye of devotion. When the eye, the tongue, the ear, when the senses become purified by contact with Krishna, Krishna bhakti begins to awaken the mood of wishing to be in service to Krishna through the chanting of Krishna's holy name awakens. Prabhupada's explanation in the purport. Just as those who are greedy see everything as a source of money-making, the most Krishna everywhere. This avyakta murti that the material eyes cannot see. Behold by mystic opulence. This is this yogam aishvaryam. Aishvaryam, aishvaram. Nacha matstani bhutani pashame yogam aishvaram. Bhuta brinda chabhutasto mamatma bhuta bhavanaha. And yet everything that is created does not rest in me. Mother Jasoda looking inside Krishna's mouth and seeing everything inside Krishna's mouth. Everything is resting in him. But everything is not resting in him. Behold my mystic opulence. Although I am the maintainer of all living entities and although I am everywhere, I am not part of this cosmic manifestation. He has his own abode, his own associates, his own place. For myself is the very source of creation. So all beings are in me but not in him. So that message is presented in these verses by Prahlad, 30, 31. Prabhupada explains, when we hear that everything is resting upon Krishna, we should not imagine him to be something like Atlas of the Greek mythology, holding up the globe on his shoulders and looking very tired. Doesn't look particularly tired, looks pretty strong. It doesn't have a very solid rock to stand on, but doesn't it fall over? Krishna is aloof from this mature creation simply by his supreme will. Everything is carried out perfectly by his inconceivable energies. That's how he moves everything. He doesn't have to lift everything. Everything rests upon him, means upon his energies. He is different from this material manifestation, yet he is also present personally. This is his mystic power. But so Supersoul is all pervasive, but Supersoul doesn't have to do anything. It's his potencies that do things. And the living beings are not in me. See my inconceivable power. These are acharyas. I maintain them and protect them, but I am not in them. My mind maintains and protects them. His mind, meaning icha, his desire. Yoga is defined as, quote, the means by which something very difficult is accomplished. That's a different definition than we're used to hearing. We're used to hearing yoga means linking. Here's a different one. The means by which something very difficult is accomplished. Yoga thus refers here to the Lord's form endowed with inconceivable shakti, whose quality is that his every desire is fulfilled without effort. Satya Sankalpa. Spelling is wrong. Satya Sankalpa should be Shakti. This is a phrase that Vishwanath uses from time to time. It's one of the uses is in the Damodar Lila, when Mother Jasoda is trying to bind Krishna. She can't because Krishna's Satya Sankalpa Shakti is blocking her from, he doesn't, his Ichha Shakti and Satya Sankalpa Shakti, no way. I want to go get some more butter and yogurt. You can't bind me. So she can't. It's only when Krishna withdraws, that his picture very clearly sees Krishna is exhibiting, and when he withdraws them, which other potencies he exhibits, so that his pastimes can be fulfilled. So, this Satya Sankalpa Shakti is how it rules other potencies, sub-potencies of Satya Sankalpa Shakti, that then permit everything to happen. I maintain and protect all beings, but have no contact with them at all, because my mind, Mama Atma, takes care of them. Bhuta Bhavana. Mama Atma. I maintain and protect them by my extraordinary, oh, there it is, Satya Sankalpita Shakti. By my extraordinary yoga, by my Satya Sankalpita Shakti, I do not have to act with my body like Atlas lifting the earth. He says desires and his potencies do everything. By the command of that this is a Upanishad reference. By the command of that imperishable Lord, O Gargi, the sun and moon remain in their positions. By the command of that imperishable Lord, O Gargi, heaven and earth remain in their positions. So he doesn't have to run around and manage the universe. He just desires, and the potencies carry out his desire. Very practical. If you want to be God, that's, you have to have all those potencies to just do what you want. You don't have to do anything. Krishna's determination is itself actual fact. This is Prabhupada's language in the purport of 9.5. We may think of doing something, but there's so many infants. It is not possible to do as we like. But when Krishna wants to do something, simply by his willing, everything is performed so perfectly that one cannot imagine how it is being done. So if you're a mechanistic scientist, it's chance or some other message that says, I really don't understand it. But it's being revealed here by Prabhupada's purport and by these verses, is by his potency, that the Avyaktamurti Lord has a Chinchi Shakti, or Satya Sankalpita Shakti. And everything is being carried out that way. And, you know, the naysayers will say, no. We say, why not? Okay, so there's five verses. That's a little background. Particularly from Bhagavad Gita. Now here's the Bhagavatam way, or Prahlad Maharaj's way, second time around, which means it's important, the topic is important. The oneness of Krishna with all things, his Advaita feature. And time, once again, becomes very important. We'll see. All phases of time. Krishna and Krishna and Krishna. Here's one of the it's actually the first of the Chaturshloki verses of the Bhagavatam, 2.9.33. You're familiar with four essential verses out of the 18,000 are essence verses of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, and the message of this first one is almost identical, it's not verbatim, but almost identical message with these, you can say, very important verses of Prahlad. Very important verses. So here it is, the first of the four essential verses of the whole Bhagavatam. Aham eva asame bhagre. Prior to the cosmic creation, only I exist. and no phenomena exist, either gross, or subtle, or primordial. After creation, only I exist in everything, and after annihilation, guess what? Only I remain eternally. So he's existing in all phases of time. Here's the Sanskrit. We're going to see this phrase again. Ekas tvam eva jagat etam. Jagat means universe. And so, tvam, he's speaking about himself. I alone exist within creation. So there's creation. Oh, dear Lord, you, tvam. You alone manifest yourself as the entire cosmic manifestation. That's a oneness statement. For you existed before the creation, you exist after the annihilation, and you are the maintainer between the beginning and the end. All this is done by your external energy through actions and reactions of the three modes of material nature. Therefore, whatever exists externally and internally is you alone. The oneness. Because he's the cause, the source. Prabhupada's purport. The activities of the Lord are transcendental because to create this cosmic manifestation, Govinda expands his external energy and enters into everything in this universe, and in this way he's entire cosmic manifestation. He's explaining those verses from Bhagavad Gita. I am situated everything, but everything is not in me. So it's also a mini fast forward of the process of creation, and in the upcoming verses we're going to get a somewhat slowed down version. So there's that phrase at the beginning of this text 30, Ekas tvam eva jagat etam, you are everything. And it's very similar to this often repeated, one of the favorites of the Mayavadi's phrases from Chandogya Upanishad. The energy and energetic are one. So everything is one. How are we to understand that? Because Mayavadis will say it regularly. And if you read carefully Prahlad Maharaj's prayers, it becomes very clear. At the same time, everything is one with Krishna. Krishna is aloof. The source is aloof. And in this verse and the purport, there's three examples. The example of the seed and the tree. So the tree grows from the seed. So after the tree grows, where's the seed? Gone. Because the cause, how can you see the cause when the effect is there? The seed is gone. So where did the tree come from? Big Bang or evolution or something. But then it came from a seed. Or where did the seed come from? It came from a tree. So the source, Krishna, is aloof from the effect. And Madhvacharya gives this one, you'll see. There's a tree, and then if the tree is on fire, it's the same tree, but when it's before it was on fire, it's gone, and now it's the tree on fire, and then it's ashes. So, Krishna is the source, and you cannot detect the source in that which is coming from the source if all you're observing is what is coming from the source. Pretty simple, yeah? Phases of time are under the control of the Supreme Lord, thus they're different from him. So here we go. Here's the verse of 31. I'm not chanting these because of our time factor. My dear Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, the entire cosmic manifestation is caused by you, and the cosmic manifestation is an effect of your energy, Although the entire cosmos is but you alone, here's the difference part, you keep yourself aloof from it. For example, the conception of mine and yours is certainly a type of illusion, because everything is an emanation from you, and therefore not different from you. Indeed, the cosmic manifestation is not different from you, and the annihilation is also caused by you. So we're inching towards the difference along with the non-difference. This relationship between, this is purport. This relationship between your lordship, this is the verse itself. This relationship between your lordship and the cosmos is illustrated by the example of the seed and the tree, or subtle cause and gross manifestation. So, nice array of varieties of trees, very colorful, different season. But the tree is produced from the seed. There's the subtle cause and the gross manifestation and the cosmic feature. Prabhupada explains, this is the purport. Everything exists in time. And the three phases of time, past, present, and future, are one. Every day, the time factor is experienced as morning, noon, and evening. And everything taken together is one. Everything passes through time's phases of present, past, and future, yet the Lord is always the same. He is nitya shashvata, eternally permanent. So, He's present, nitya shashvata, through all phases of time, past, present, future. So before the creation, during the cosmic manifestation, and afterwards. This phrase, nitya shashvata, is directly from Bhagavad Gita. It's one of the distinctions between Krishna and the creation. He's eternally existing. And phases of time are from Him. They're under His direction, and therefore their time is different than Him. Here's Baladev Vidyabhusan. My dear Lord, He's expressing, your creation is full of varieties. There's no difference between one thing and another, yet in varieties there are differences. This is Madhvacharya. Madhvacharya gives an example. A tree and the tree on fire. Looks like what happens after Christmas in people's homes. Hope they take it outside. Both trees are the same, but they look different because of the time factor. So time is destroying this one, and time is maintaining that one. Same tree. So Krishna is the time factor, and the manifestation keeps changing. The time factor is under the control of the Supreme Lord, and therefore the Supreme Lord is different from time. Is anybody confused? What's going on here? This is a philosophy class. Prahlad Maharaj, 5-year-old giving a philosophy class. These are different examples. Just going back to that first slide. These are different examples of how, in addition to the non-difference feature of the Supreme, there's a difference feature, like the seed and the tree, like a tree that's on fire and the tree that's before it's on fire, about the presence of time, past, present, and future. The unchanging Lord isn't changing through the phases of time, but time is under His direction, so He's different than time. If you recall, this helps us appreciate His greatness. And through greatness, we wish to serve him. We wish to serve him as a servant serves the master. He is Aishwarya. He's great. God is great. We're very tiny. So we should serve him. And in that mood of service, whatever the manifestations of time bring about, this is commentary, an advanced devotee consequently does not distinguish between happiness and distress. So here's another one. You know, chapter 6, Bhagavad Gita. How do you keep the mind peaceful? How do you keep the mind neutral towards happiness and distress? If your attention goes to that which is eternal, the passing of something temporary isn't a big deal because it's temporary. Say it the other way around. If you turn your attention away from that which is eternal, temporary things become everything. It's really cold out. So it consumes the attention of the population that doesn't like the cold out. Anyway. And New York, they shut down the airports because it's not just cold, it's so much snow. And it's even snowing in Florida. So, you know, happiness and distress. But for the transcendentalist that is in touch with Sat, but that which is eternal, it's not so significant. I mean, you can detect the difference between a body that's got a hole in it and bleeding and there's some pain, and one that isn't, a limb that isn't. But it's not the source of happiness or distress. You attend to it and you move on. Because if you're genuinely attached to that which is eternal. Here's Srila Prabhupada quoting this important verse of the 10th canto, chapter 14. We've touched on it already. Mukti pade sa dayabak. One who, my dear Lord, this is the distress, happiness message. One who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds and offering you respectful obeisances with his heart, words, and body, is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim. Time is moving things. Here's the commentary explained in the purport. Time is moving things, so here's the father, and he's passing on his property to his son, because that's the law of primogeniture. A son inherits the property of his father. Similarly, when the devotee is fully Krishna conscious, undisturbed by dualities, he is sure that he will return home back to Godhead, just as one inherits his father's property. When my father wrote his will, and then I became a devotee, he rewrote his will. He didn't tell me, but my older brother told me. He changed his will so that there were five children, and I was the youngest of five. And the will was changed so that my brother was the executor of the will, and it was demanded in the will, and my father explained it to my brother, that the money shouldn't go to Krishna. And I said to my brother, how's that possible? My life is Krishna. You know that. How can I? He said, well, you know, something that you do for yourself that's in service to Krishna. Okay, that's word juggling. Anyway, don't just give it to the temple. It was in the will. I couldn't. I figured out how to. Anyway. Everything is one, the Supreme Lord. Yet everything is separate from the Lord. This is the understanding of oneness and difference. This is Srila Prabhupada's explanation. So, when it's properly understood, I could go into an explanation of how do you justify devotional service? Because this is material. It's a house. And this is our body. And this is our tongue. And this is our ear. And this is our mind. And it's all material. So how do you justify devotional service? This is the explanation. It has a relationship of oneness with the Supreme Lord. And using it in the service to the Supreme Lord, then we recognize there's the served and the servitor and the instruments or implements of service. It's a philosophy that philosophically justifies devotional service. Otherwise, what is it? We're saying something, but what's the philosophical basis for it or justification for it? For some people, it's not a big deal. Just do devotional service. Chant, be happy. But there's a philosophical basis for it. So, now comes three verses and we're done. And he's going a little bit more in slow motion about differences in the process of creation. And the first one he focuses on is Yoga Nidra. And Nidra means sleep. Sleep is mode of ignorance. So when we go to sleep, it's not the same as Vishnu's Yoga Nidra. He's not snoring. And his consciousness doesn't dim in any ways. Specifically, Yoga Nidra means with his internal potency, he's enjoying eternal pastimes with his internal potency within. That's what Yoga Nidra is. So it's different than our sleeping. Here's Prahlad's prayer. Oh my Lord, it's part of the creation. After the annihilation, the creative energy is kept in you, who appear to sleep with half-closed eyes. Actually, however, you do not sleep like ordinary human being, for you are always in a transcendental stage beyond the creation of the material world, and you always feel transcendental bliss. As Karana Dakshayi Vishnu, you thus remain in your transcendental status, not touching material objects. Although you appear to sleep, the sleeping is distinct from sleeping in ignorance. So there's Lord Vishnu, and he's in his Yoga Nidra position. We don't see the Goddess of Fortune because she's within, and he's enjoying eternal pastimes with her within. Then, next, this cosmic manifestation comes from you, thus part of you, although different. So this is both simultaneous, one different. Text 33, translation reads, this cosmic manifestation, the material world, is also your body. In one sense, he has a spiritual body, but material energy constitutes his cosmic viratu, cosmic form. This total lump of matter is agitated by your potent energy known as Kala Shakti. And thus the three modes of material nature are manifested. So there's slower motion than this one, but it's describing the relationship of all things with Krishna. And there's a oneness and there's a difference, relationship of all things with Krishna. And so we can engage the house, we can engage the utensils in the kitchen, and we can engage the mridanga and the microphone and things that are of this material world because they're from Krishna, in service to Krishna. He described this earlier. His body born of Hiranyakashipu had become spiritualized by the touch of devotion or bhakti. And when, so, the Lord glances over Pradhan, time energy is carried by the glance, that time energy agitates Pradhan, and this, as mentioned here, the three modes of material nature separate out, or they were in a dormant condition, time activates them. You awaken from the bed of Shesha, Ananta, and from your navel a small transcendental seed is generated. It is from this seed that the lotus flower of the gigantic universe is manifested, exactly as a banyan tree grows from a small seed. Same example. So, when Brahma tries to find his origin, he can't find his origin by climbing down the stem. The conclusion is that both the material world and the spiritual world are considered to be the body of the Supreme Lord. We can understand that the material body is caused by the spiritual body and is therefore an expansion of the spiritual body. Thus, when one takes up spiritual activities, one's entire material body is spiritualized. That's Prabhupada's purport. Now that's little stretch. The material body is caused by the spiritual body and therefore an expansion of the spiritual body. It's caused by in the sense that you wouldn't have a physical body if you didn't have the soul. And the soul has a spiritual body, spiritual form. So then, like Prabhupada's example of the glove. And the glove fits the hand because it's got five fingers and you wiggle the hand. And it wiggles the glove. So because we have spiritual senses, then we have the capacity to have material senses or material perception. As long as we do not realize this, we live in the material world. But when we are fully Krishna conscious, we live not in the material world, but in the spiritual world. It's a puzzle. Enigma, something that's not easily understood. Like Prabhupada saying, this temple is not in New York, it's in Vaikuntha. Look like New York. Look out the window. Look like New York. But the temple, because of being spiritualized, that not only the body or the tongue or the ear, but the whole place where spiritual activity goes on, then that makes it a temple, makes it a spiritual place. I remember hearing, we're recording, it was a big deal when one of the first properties that was purchased was the Detroit Temple. And because at the university that I was attending, two devotee couples were sent from State University of New York at Buffalo to go to Detroit to start a center. And then somebody else went to Toronto to start a center. So when they went to Detroit, they bought a house. It was a big deal because we didn't have money to buy anything. But they somehow got the money to buy a house. So Prabhupada visited, and it was in a residential neighborhood. And Prabhupada's one of his introductory lectures after coming there and seeing the place, staying there in the building. Prabhupada said, why do we call this a temple? All the other, we call them houses. We call this a temple. It's a temple because Krishna conscious activity is going on. Same, you know, wood frame house, but now it's a temple because it's being used in Krishna's service. So similarly, here's a house, and your house can be a sacred place. If it's used in Krishna's service, distinct from if it's used for sense gratification. And it's just, you know, it's a question of consciousness. Eating goes on, work goes on, sleeping goes on, cooking goes on, whatever else goes on. If it's dedicated consciousness-wise to service of Krishna, the place becomes spiritualized, and otherwise we remain in a house or in the material world. Material pleasure means the pleasure of the senses, spiritual pleasure means the pleasure of Krishna. Prabhupada's words, different images. So now, final verse for this evening. This is, a little bit slower motion than what he said earlier about creation, but Brahma couldn't find the source of his lotus because, same thing as before, when the subtle cause produces a result, you can't see the subtle cause anymore. When the seed produces its fructified lotus flower, the original seed can't be seen anymore. And Prabhupada gives this example. We'll see. Cotton. From cotton you make thread. And when you have thread, you can't see the cotton anymore, but it's in the form of a thread. You take the thread and weave it, and you can't see the thread anymore. It's in the form of a cloth. Here's exactly the same reference here. Bijam. Oops. From that great lotus flower, Brahma was generated. But Brahma certainly could see nothing but the lotus. Therefore, thinking you to be outside, Lord Brahma dove into the water and attempted to find the source of the lotus for 100 years. Different durations. This one is 100. He could find no trace of you, however, for when a seed fructifies, here are some seeds, the original seed cannot be seen. And Prabhupada's example, when cotton is transformed into thread, the cotton is no longer visible. And when the thread is woven into cloth, the thread is no longer visible. That's the end. The Avyaktamurti from Bhagavad Gita, the not visible to material eyes form of the Lord. So we can think of it in terms of sunshine, and where's the form in sunshine? But in Paramatma feature, he's present everywhere, but he with material vision cannot be seen. He can make himself be seen for those that have spiritual vision, those that have a desire to see him, a desire to serve him. So, and so he's now describing in slower motion this difference, non-difference feature, the philosophy of difference, non-difference, and really slow motion is third canto Bhagavatam. It's really tedious going through the unfolding of creation. But it's the same theme that creation comes from Vishnu. He's the person from whom creation comes, and he generates Brahma, who does the engineering, not exactly the creation, but under the empowerment and with the energy and the plan and everything. He's the instrument of the process of creation. He does this on behalf of Lord Vishnu. And same thing that we do. Some little something. You go in the kitchen, cook a meal. Or you go get an education, get a job, and you go to the office. And we're creating things. It's much smaller standard or level or grade of creation. We're creating something. And the capacity to do that is to be acknowledged. Where's that coming from? So like this example, where's the cotton? There was a time when, it was really funny. I thought it was funny. We at one time had a gurukul in Lake Huntington, New York. It was in way north, in Rockland County or something like that. Or so part of New York State that it dips down above the state of New Jersey. And there was a gurukul and there were some cows. So during the summertime, they would have a camp with children. And one of the things they did at the camp was show the kids that lived in the city a cow. And they said, this is where milk comes from. And the kids said, no, you're just teasing me. And then over there, there's a field of wheat, and that's where bread comes from. No. Bread comes from the corner store. I know. You can't tell me it comes from over there. They're so disconnected with... And then what to speak of, where does the wheat come from? Where's the cow come from? So disconnected. So again, the connection, this Aishvarya Gyan is everything. There isn't anything positively. Everything has its source of emanation. And that source of emanation, thus there's a relationship of oneness with all things. And so we can offer the water to Krishna. There's a whole tray of water over there. And we can offer this body in service to Krishna. We can offer our voice in service to... We can offer whatever there is, if we know how it is to be offered, in service to Krishna. And then that water and the paraphernalia of worship becomes spiritualized. It acts in a spiritual way. Just like smelling the flower that's offered to the deity. It acts in a spiritual way. The sound of the conch shell. I think Hemangi was describing to me there was some hearing when this fellow wanted to buy the property next door to the Chicago Temple. Did you hear about that? Didn't hear about that? Nothing? There was a developer adjacent to the temple was for sale, and he had made a bid for the property, and it was a contingency bid that he would get approval to extend in such a way that the windows of the temple would be blocked. Because it was, developers, they would buy X and sell for 3X. Stoka Krishna knows the whole arrangement. So, one of the local people, there was like a zoning hearing or something like that, and anybody was invited, and the people were saying, there's not going to be any parking. There isn't enough parking now, and you're going to have a big parking problem. So he had to solve the parking problem. And people were saying, we like the Krishnas. They play their trumpet at 4:30 in the morning. We like it. It's nice. Something like that. So for us, the blowing the conch is, it's purifying. It's a conch, and it's offered to Krishna in devotion, and it's purifying. To some neighbors, you can't do that. Somehow our neighbors say they like it. And where our Naperville center is, we don't have to worry about it. Although Dhananjay Pandit really blows the conch really loud. Like the whole room shakes. So something that's material can be transformed or act in a spiritual way. So the consciousness behind the act needs to be proper, and this is the philosophical foundation for that. Again, it's a little bit in slow motion, so therefore maybe it's a little bit tedious, but the point is made again and again. We don't see Krishna in the creation. We don't see the seed in the product of the seed. Brahma couldn't find. He's smarter than we are. He couldn't find the source because, as is described here. And then he goes on into, further details of creation. So we didn't witness all that stuff. We weren't around when Brahma climbed down the stem and tried to find the source of the lotus. But similarly, we may, with an inquisitive mind, want to understand, where does everything come from, kind of a question, or why, what's the cause of this? And if philosophically, everything, whatever is the cause of this, that's a result of some, of that. And that's a result of something else, and there's a cause of all causes. There's a connection of all things. This is the message. There's a connection of all things with the source. And therefore, let us worship that source. Now, what's the source? We don't know, except through the scripture. Prahlad knows. He heard from Narada. And he's explaining it so that we can know. And again, just going back to the previous section of verses, it connects with bhakti. Knowing that, what do? If you're a jnani, you whitewash the thing and say, we're Brahman. And if you're a devotee, you serve Krishna. Okay, so any discussion? And he's only 5 years old. How old are you? 10. Imagine if you knew all this stuff when you were 5 years old. You have a Bhagavatam class and 5 years old. Yes?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, I'm still kind of confused on Adyaka Murthy. There's a slide that said, where Krishna says, everything's in me, but I'm not in everything. But isn't he in like all of the enemies?
Yeah, but he, in his personal feature, no. In his Goloka Vrindavan, he's not. So by his expansion as Paramatma, yes. But by in his personal feature, no. He's tricky. Yes. Yes, McClendon.
Oh, yeah. So when we hear about, I think you said the statement, like when we hear about like this Aishwarya features of the Lord, like he's in everything, but not everything. These somewhat contradictory statements.
Yes.
These amazing statements. Then we are, by hearing about these amazing statements, then you get inspired to serve him.
Not exactly. By the non-difference feature, there's dasya, that there's a relationship. Like, you know, he's my father, or you know, he's my brother. So there's a relationship. And with that, you know, I want to have that relationship. So it because we're tiny, like this God is very great and we're very small, we should serve him. That much is the impetus for the service, the Beda. Now this is our acharyas, and the abeda, you can go beyond the awe and reverence servitude and enter into this other space where it's more of a, there's more lovingness in that service relationship. Yeah? Yeah.
Trying to get to a point where we don't even see Krishna as in our religious relationship.
That's correct.
So then, at what point does the transition take place from the Aishwarya?
Well, by association with those who have dropped the Aishwarya. That's how it happens. When love becomes so elevated through, first of all, purification through service, and then through association with those who have gone beyond the Aishwarya predominance, then that can, it helps induce that more natural and spontaneous, not overridden by Aishwarya feature. So, start with service. I mean, it's something like, again, in real simple language, it's something like when we engage in service to Radha and Krishna, Prabhupada's teaching is And we should serve them like Lakshmi Narayan. It's Radha's holding, you know, a flower, and Krishna's holding his flute. And we worship them in the mood of Lakshmi Narayan, meaning with great deference of opulence. And in course of time, not artificially, but an attachment and intimacy grows, and when they move from that position of just opulence to a more intimate experience in relationship, in service. Now, he doesn't so much emphasize that in terms of deity worship. At least externally, we maintain the opulence aspect of our deity worship, but the internal feature may move to the position of a deepening relationship with the Supreme Lord. And, you know, exchanges come that indicate, you know, some special mercy that different devotees have those experiences. And different deities are more prone to exchange in that way with the devotees. There's this whole book of exchanges with Lord Jagannath and devotees. I mean, he's not holding a flute, but he's very personable in so many ways. And Sringadev too. It's all another book of the Sringadev experiences. How merciful. Anyway. Yes. Yes, exactly.
And then the second part is that
when you look at the material universe, where's Krishna? The example is given to show when the tree is there, you're not going to find the seed anymore. Although it's not a, you know, one-to-one correlation metaphor, because Krishna is still there, whereas literally the seed is gone, it's now a tree. But Krishna's not gone. You can't see Krishna. The subtle cause is not perceivable because of the allure of the cosmic manifestation, the material manifestation.
Okay, yeah. So I think right now, whatever you say, that Krishna is still there.
Yes.
That answers the second part of my question. Because some atheists will say that once upon a time there was.
Once upon a time, right.
And from God came this material universe.
Right.
And just as when a seed transforms into tree, the seed is no longer here.
Right.
So therefore, there is no God.
I was listening to a morning walk conversation 2 days ago. Srila Prabhupada in Mayapur, and he was doing this, you know, the scientist debate, warning walk kind of thing. Hriday Nanda Maharaj was offering the view that you just said some people say. Then Prabhupada wouldn't budge from that, says, well, then there is God. Yeah, but, you know, he is not involved. But involved, not involved. There is God. And he's the source. Now let us describe what that source is. He just, so, not involved is one thing, and they stopped existing is another thing. There's a subtle, I don't know the difference between the two. See if I can remember the terms. I can't remember the terms. Theology. Huh? No. There's some linguistic differentiation between some persons that view that God creates and has continued involvement, and God creates and has no continued involvement. I forget, there's some terminology. And that was what one of the things that Vridhananda was bringing, some people say. And it was very, according to both Rabindra Sarupa Prabhu and Sariputta, because I heard them discussing, both of them in their PhD thesis, they studied European history, particularly Rabindra. And so in European history, there was a period in history where in Switzerland and Germany, technology, making clocks, became a big thing. It's still Swiss watches, just famous. But they had a fascination for watches and clocks. So with that came this idea that God is like a big watchmaker. He makes the watchmaker makes the watch, and once the watch is sold, he has nothing to do with the watch. He just made the watch. So they had this conception of God that he makes creation but has no further involvement with it. So, it's not atheism, but it's not theism either. So, anyway. But the Vedic picture, for sure, there's continued involvement and then dissolution. He's involved at the beginning, the middle, and the end. It's just as Prahlad's first verse says. Okay, so I'm over-answering your question. Yes? Online, huh? Okay. Is he really there somewhere? Yes. He's really there somewhere. Well, it depends. I mean, he's in his Paramatma feature. He's within the heart and within every atom and between every atom. He's literally everywhere. Exactly as Prahlad said to Hiranyakashipu, where is Vishnu? He's everywhere. So where is he? He's everywhere. Literally everywhere. And he's not everywhere in the sense that he's in Goloka. That's the distinction brought up earlier. He is in Goloka. And he doesn't want to leave Goloka. He doesn't leave Goloka. He expands himself within the material creation. That's his Vishnu feature. But he, in his Bhagavan feature, remains in Goloka. Okay. See if she has a question to that answer. Yeah. Well, they isolate them from whatever the rest of them, the Upanishads, say, too.
Mahaprabhu mentioned that one of the greatest stumbling blocks is hearing one who hears Mayavad Bhasya, that his spiritual life is finished.
Ruined.
So how, some of us, many of us have come from, I've heard you mention before, exposure to that.
Sure. Sure. We discussed it in the Bhagavatam class. This exact point. From a binary processor point of view, the mind, it makes sense. It's compelling. Yeah. If the place of misery over here has variety, then the place of spiritual would have no variety. You got to do away with the bad stuff to get the good stuff, and so forth. Definition by negation. It's binary processor wise. It makes sense. If it's not this, then what is it? The neti-neti process brings you to realized, not what real Brahman is, but a philosophized conception of what's spiritual. So to say all this other kind of stuff, they go, no, forget it, man. You know, he's inside everything and not inside everything, and everything's within him but not within him. And, you know, the Upanishads is full of that kind of stuff. So we just throw your hands up in the air and say it's all one. It takes it takes good association, and it takes some faith in that good association, and it takes some patience to understand. You know, verses in this Prabhupada's purports naturally are explaining. Then Krishna can be understood. And otherwise, it's mysterious. It's not a surprise. It's actually very reasonable that God is mysterious. Because he's beyond our seeing power and beyond our reasoning power, and he's mysterious. If it wasn't, it'd be something material. That's also logical. It has to be mysterious. And how to understand that which is mysterious is by a mysterious process, by this descending process. So, you know, somebody that's a rationalist, a binary processor person, you know, rubbish. Take a hike. I'm a realist. I'm not a pipe dreamer like you. Seeing is believing. Show me. So that person will never come to know. And we will never come to know if we take that kind of posture. There is a way to know. And as real, using the Bhagavatam example, as real as by the eating process, after fasting, your hunger goes away, your body feels strength, and you come to the point where you're full, you're satisfied. No one has to tell you, now your hunger is going away. Repeat after me. My hunger is going away. You feel it. As much as that's something that you experience through the eating process after having fasted. So the bhakti process gives an experience. It's perceivable. You know, they can't even know the difference between the mind and the intelligence, but to speak of the soul and everything else. There's, you know, consciousness is pretty dull. So, Hare Krishna. Anything else? Did that address your question? Okay. Srila, okay, here you are. No. Yes, that's different. Shunyavadi is that yeah, not everything comes from nothing, but there nothing is. What's real? Nirvana. What's nirvana? Void. So if you think otherwise, mistaken, all there is nothing. Not just everything comes from nothing, all there is nothing. Shunyavadi. In reality, void. And Mayavad is word jugglery. All there is Brahman. But it's a word jugglery Brahman. In effect, it's the same. So it's a long explanation. You're squinting your eyes like you'd like to hear it. But it's a long explanation. Yeah? Sure. There's two different conceptions, voidism and impersonalism. Voidism is everything is nothing. Void. Voidism is what is there? You think this is a couch? Ha! It's nothing. And you think you exist? Nothing. What exists? Nothing. So enlightenment for a voidist or, yeah, for a shunyavadi, shunya means zero, is nothingness. You enter into this higher enlightened state of nothingness. That's what it is. Then there's this other thing you've probably heard just being around the devotees, is the mayavadi. So what's a mayavadi? A mayavadi says all there is one thing, and that's spirit or Brahman, undifferentiated Brahman. And everything else is just an illusion or maya covering that one thing. So this is just for him. All that exists is Brahman. And you may think of yourself as an individual, but all you are is Brahman. But, you know, good news, I'm Brahman, he's Brahman, and we're all Brahman. We're all this one spiritual entity. That's who we are, Brahman. So back to the other one is nothing. Here is something, a philosophized something. Brahman, spirit. Unmixed, homogeneous, put everything in a big blender and turn it on high speed and you get Brahman. Brahman, spirit. And that's everything. And there isn't anything else. You think there's something else, that's illusion. Maya. So, Maya covers Brahman. All you have to do is remove the covering and you realize you're God. You're Brahman. Then there's over here. That's what we're hearing. Everything comes from one source. We're part of everything that comes from one source. The couch is, and everything else that exists comes from a source. And there is a relationship of oneness of all things, you and me and stuff, from that source. And there's a difference. There's the source and there's the stuff. There's the part and there's the whole. There's a spark and there's the big fire from which the spark comes. And so, as the tiny part of the whole, we should be engaged in serving the whole. Like, for example, here's the hand. The hand isn't the body, it's part of the body. And that was the function of the hand, to serve the whole body. No, the hand could say, well, wait a minute. I don't want to serve the whole body. I'm just going to eat myself. But the hand can't eat itself, it'll wither. But if the hand serves the body, the food goes over here and the nourishment goes to the whole body. Then nourishment goes to the hand and all the other parts of the body. We serve the whole by serving the source of everything. And that's what this teaching is. It's called Vaishnava. Serve Vishnu. That's where the Vaishnava comes from. Vishnu. We serve Vishnu or Krishna. We're the part serving the whole. And we're seeing other things that are also from that whole. So we take other things and offer that to the whole. Here's some water, and you offer the water to Krishna, and you would take the water in service to Krishna. It's cold, you got a jacket, you put your jacket on, it's part of Krishna's energy. We're using it in Krishna's service, for service to Krishna. We use everything in service to Krishna. That's this teaching. And that's the quality of love. And that's a natural condition for us, is the quality of love. And when we leave that condition of love, we have a hard time. We struggle very, very hard with material nature. trying to be good and sometimes messing up and having consequences for both. Karma. Good karma, bad karma, and bondage. So the Bhagavad Gita's message is leave that all behind and go to the position of just devotion. Serve Krishna with all your heart. It's the same as these words. With your heart, with your words, with your body. Serve Krishna. So back to these other two. The voidists, they don't want service. And the impersonalists, they don't want service. The devotees want service. They want to serve Krishna. We don't want to become Krishna or become something. We just want to serve Krishna and be happy. We're done. Last question. How did I do what?
You mentioned that once you remove the maya, you'll be
able to see Brahma. Well, you know that that's who you are. Not you'll be able to see. That's who you are. You become...
How do you get there? How do you get
there? Just take sannyas. Renounce the world. And chant Om and study Vedanta Sutra and you know, you'll realize your Brahmanness. No. It's philosophized. It's not, we make a distinction, it's not commonly made, but we make a distinction between one who is Brahman realized, a Brahma body and a Maya body. A Maya body is word juggler. The four Kumaras, they were Brahman realized. They didn't have word juggling. They were Brahman realized. Alright. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.